You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Did you have anything planned for tonight, or were you just kind of hanging out?
Just hanging out tonight.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, actually, the wife and I all day today were, we were doing a little own retro thing today. We've been watching through the Rocky box set yesterday and today, so it's been a retro weekend, kind of.
Well, that's very cool. I've been watching Glow every chance I get.
Yeah. I tried watching that the first season when it came out. Couldn't get into it. I was a big fan of the original Glow, though, back in the 80s, but not so much the Netflix series.
What don't you like about it?
I don't know. I just couldn't get into it. This it's going to sound crazy liking the old one, but it all just seems too fake on the TV show.
Oh, that's funny. The main character, I forget the actress's name, but she's one of those that she's a, it takes a little while for you to get kind of like, you know, appreciate her acting.
And, Alison Brie, I love her acting. Yeah. I loved her in Mad Men, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. I can't get into it. I'm going to give it another shot, though.
Yeah, I'm really digging what they're doing with the second season, but of course you need to have the background of the first season to really set everything up properly.
Yeah, I got the feeling they were trying way too hard with the characters when they were already so far over the top back in 1986 when they, you know, the originals were around, that they didn't need to go any farther over the top with them, but it seems like they're trying too hard.
Yeah, it's really about the drama behind, you know, the making of Glow versus, you know, actual matches and, you know, the fake story drama that they, you know, were creating for each of their characters. But it's a fun ride. It's a fun ride for me. Like I said, normally I'm one of these guys that if you don't hook me right away, I don't, give it a lot of time, but I gave this one more time, you know, more episodes to get kind of hooked. And then once I did, then of course I love it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to revisit it here when I get time, but you know, time is a hard thing to come by. So
I know exactly how you feel about that. So what you drinking?
Coffee.
All right. Staying
dark
awake.
Dark roast.
Yeah. That's my thing. Dark roast. Love that stuff.
Yeah, usually I just freebase it, but I figured since I'm on the air tonight, I would actually drink it. So
usually just inject the caffeine in right into the veins, do you?
Yeah, that or snort the grounds, one or the other.
There you go, perfect. All right, man. So Rose and Scott are not able to join us. Rose, she felt she didn't have anything to add to the topic. She wasn't really into collecting cards. And Mr. Scott decided to spend the day, you know, just jet-setting around on a boat, and then he got himself sunburned and just tired. So.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, I have a lot to add to the conversation.
Because are those unopened?
Yes, sir.
Nice.
And there's way more here than I could hold in those two hands, so, yeah.
Oh, very good.
I am a connoisseur of non-sports cards.
Well, then this is going to be really cool then. I don't have the one that I had. You know what? We'll get into that. it's so easy to just jump right into the conversation and then like, you didn't like, crap, I didn't even do an intro. So if you're ready to go.
Anytime, man.
All right. Let me see here. Just make sure that's recording. That's always a very important step for me. I've learned my lesson. I had this one awesome conversation with this gentleman about Mask. You know, it was actually one that I arranged to talk to him during my lunch break because he was in the UK. And so I took a break from work, you know, found a nice secluded spot, set up my Skype session, and I record, and I thought I was recording it, and it said that it was recording. But then I, when I went to go back to like listen to it again, it had 0 bytes.
And you can't ever recapture those conversations again and not feel natural at all with it. So
yeah,
once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. I was like, damn it. So now I'm like, you know, just one of those, you know, anal where I've got to see the file growing. Yeah. You know, just to be sure. And it's growing. So we're good. So this is Banzai Retro Club. I am Dave. Can you dig it? Regular co-hosts Scott and Rose are not online, but I have got special guest Mickey from Retro Rambler. Thanks for being here, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
You know, Mickey is one of these cats that what a lot of people don't know is we have kind of a closed-knit group on Twitter, and we interact with each other, and we're called the Retro Club on that, and we have just these great exchanges of just, you know, sharing of information, sharing of things. And Mickey, you are just have been just a great source of like how to get, you know, social media presence done and websites and all that stuff. So I mean, how long have you been in this game?
Oh my goodness, I've been online since 95.
Okay.
I've always been fascinated with everything about the internet and different things, different times catch my eye. You know, I had old Angel Fire websites, old Tripod websites. So I've had a lot of time. What would that be now? 23 years? Yeah, 23 years of just messing around on the back end of the internet. So I don't know a whole lot about anything, but I know a little bit about everything. So the jack of all trades, master of none.
I was about to say the same exact thing. Well, that's it's a good skill set to have, and you know, you've laid out some solid advice, you know, to, you know, for our stuff going on with Banzai Retro Club. I haven't taken you up on any of it, but you gave some solid advice, you know, just like on the back end of the website. So yeah, very appreciative of like, you know, you imparting your knowledge. And what I love so much about our group is, you know, we're always doing that with each other. You know, we're always sharing, yep, the love. And you know, it's not like a competition of who can get the most followers and crap like that. It's, you know, I like this about, you know, this retro topic. What do you think? You know, and it's just been just a great conversation.
Yeah. You know, you're just talking about not caring who gets followers or whatever. That's me. 'Cause my whole thing is I want to put my memories out there for people. So the more people who see them, the more comments, the more interaction, the more memories I get. I want to see all of your memories. I want you to succeed because everybody who interacts on any retro sites, you know, Rediscover the 80s or my site or Banzai Retro Club, man, I just eat every bit of that up. So I'm down to help anybody get out there and put their stories out because in turn that just leads to more stories coming back for me to enjoy.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And what I've discovered since I've been doing this, you know, podcast or blogging or whatever you want to call it, everyone's got their own version of what they went through. You know, my 80s was different than your 80s. You know, you had different likes, dislikes. And when I'm talking to Scott, you get into these, you know, like deep cuts about music. And I was always a, you know, like top 20 guy. So, you know, it's great to hear these stories and, you know, that time that, you know, you went to that roller rink and, you know, you fell flat in your face right in front of the girl you were impressed by. You know, I love to hear that stuff. You know, those are great stories.
Yeah, because anybody can sit down and check out Wikipedia or Google anything and put together a top five, whatever, you know, retro theme thing. But if you don't have the memories and can't share them, then it's hollow, if that makes any sense. I like, just like what you said, I like reading the personal experiences related to all these pop culture icons and events and times and moments. So, and that's what you get, you know, from Retro Ramblings, my site, and so many others. You know, Jason, you've had him on your show before from Rediscover the 80s, reading a lot of his times and memories. I believe he and I would have been best friends back in the late 80s. We shared a lot of interest and experiences, it seemed like.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. You know, I think we've all experienced those websites or those people that, you know, try to regurgitate all those facts and figures and, you know, this movie grossed this, or, you know, it had production costs of this. And I never remember those details. You know, for me, it's the, you know, you tell me that experience that you had when you went to the theater and you saw it for the first time, that sticks with me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's fine. And I do it. It's fine to use those facts and figures and look them up. Hell, I can't remember them either, but look them up to round out the topic and give context. But
right.
Without the personal association and the personal nostalgia, it's just like reading a Wikipedia article. It's dry as it can be.
Right.
Or listening to it on a podcast or watching a video on YouTube. It's just dry without the personal emotional attachment to it.
Agree 100%. So what's happened as far as for you, the listener, to understand is that, you know, we started this thing where we do these fan follow Fridays, and we do these things where we post something on Twitter and we start talking about different, you know, we try to get a hashtag going, basically. And I started this hashtag on Twitter that was basically around a, you know, what's your favorite retro fad? And so it went into like several different directions. I mean, we had somebody that commented on breakdancing, and things along that lines, but somewhere the conversation turned to non-sports cards. And that's where we ended up with this conversation going, because there was a few of us that really embraced that topic and said, hell yeah, I was involved in that, and I have a collection. And so Mickey and I, we started, you know, exchanging thoughts back and forth, you know, of different things that, you know, we liked about our collections. And so it just seemed to be the right conversation point to have a podcast topic on.
And, you know, I've seen that thread Friday, and I started to chime in a couple of times. I'm thinking, I was really big into Pogs in the 90s, and I was big into slap bracelets and this and that and the other thing. And then, like you, I've seen people talking about the trading cards, the non-sports cards, and it never even entered. That was the biggest fad I was into, but it never registered to me as a fad because I never grew out of it. I mean, even today, these years later, I'm still into it. So it was a fad for the general public, but for me, it was not a fad. So it never even entered my mind until I seen that come up on the thread. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that would have been a fad for a lot of people. So,
yeah, I'm wondering if, I mean, was there a heyday for non-sports cards? I mean, was it through the 90s maybe? I don't know.
You know, they started producing, you know, here we were talking earlier about facts and figures, but they started producing non-sports cards at least as far back as the 1950s, and they used to include one with packs of gum, and before long it was the tables turned. The card was no longer the side attraction to the pack of gum. Roles reversed, and the piece of gum become the side attraction to the pack of cards. So they've been around forever, but my personal experience with it, I would have been 12 when 1990 rolled around. That's when I really got into non-sports cards, with the Marvel Universe cards. I would say through the 90s, they probably sold way more non-sports cards than they had at any point before that. That's not to say that they weren't popular in the 80s, because without seeing all the different cards that were produced in the 80s and 90s, I know that through the late 70s and all through the 80s, every popular television show had a set of trading cards. And in the 90s, a lot of mediocre movies had trading cards. Movies from the 80s, you know, the biggest blockbusters of the 80s had trading cards. But in the 90s, it was more reserved for the second tier movies, I guess you could say. It's like they were compensating for what they were not going to make at the box office by putting more money in their pocket with the merchandise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess what I was trying to understand was the, like you were alluding to, you know, I know that they've been around for a while. And I mean, when we had a podcast on another network, we had this thing where we were talking about the Incredible Hulk TV show, and we would break down each episode. So as part of trying to promote that those episodes, I would find try to find the associated trading card image online to post with the link for the episode. So yeah, I know that, you know, that was like 77, 78, 79, somewhere in there, that the Incredible Hulk TV show, you know, and that those cards would have been out at that time. So yeah, I know that they were around, and I know they were popular, and I remember seeing images of like the Dukes of Hazzard cards and things along those lines. So I know they were a thing. I just didn't know if there was a, you know, a time period that it was the, you know, the heyday for them. And I think what you had talked about with the comic books, you know, I know the 90s were really big in, you know, creating comics that were collectible. You know, you had the same comic that had all of the different, you know, with a different cover, you know, different cover art. And so it kind of got saturated. And I think that was in the same vein of trying to market, you know, that material.
Well, I'm going to say that the 90s most likely were the heyday because, and it traces back to sports cards. All through the 80s, baseball cards got bigger and bigger to the point that in 1988, Topps produced more packs and cases of their 1988 Topps baseball cards than any set had ever been produced before, and I believe has ever been produced since then. So the speculator market hit baseball cards and sports cards in general before the speculator market hit comic books. And the general flow of life, as you know, if sports cards are big in 88 and they're selling record numbers, then they're going to start churning out as many different types of cards as they can. So I would say the big influx of non-sports cards came right after that, which would line up, you know, with the early 90s, because they seen these, you know, Upper Deck started because of the success of Topps, how many packs they were just selling every year. Upper Deck came along, several other companies come along, and then you couldn't make a living just selling baseball cards, so they started going out and getting licenses for movies and TV shows. So all that dovetailed right into the early 90s and lined up. You know, it was like a perfect storm for non-sports cards. You're coming off the high of the actual sports cards in the late 80s, along with the speculator market of comic books in the 90s, they put out, it seemed like every popular comic book also had a non-sports card to accompany the comic book. So you got the double whammy there from both industries, the sports cards and the comic books jumping in to make non-sports cards.
Right. So you brought up something that piqued my interest there before, where you were talking about even the not-so-good movies getting sports cards. Do you have anything in your collection, I guess, that would be the not-so-good movies that you accumulated, that, you know, a guilty pleasure, if you will?
Well, not because I enjoyed the movie, but just because, you know, I like non-sports cards. And I know you can see me. I'm going to hold up some, you know, the listeners won't be able to see them, but, you know, from the mid-90s, let me know if you can see that.
The Phantom
yeah. Movie card. Dick Tracy movie cards from 1990.
Yeah, Madonna.
Which these things were highly, highly, highly overproduced. Of course, the whole movie kind of flopped. The Rocketeer cards from the early 90s. So a lot of movies from the 90s had cards, and I guess it makes sense. Rocketeer was a comic book movie. Dick Tracy was a comic book character. So all the Batman movies, Back to the Future, Harry and the Hendersons in the late 80s had trading cards. Not that there's anything wrong with Harry and the Hendersons, but yeah, I don't know that they needed trading cards. RoboCop, you know, from RoboCop 2, trading cards. So yeah, a lot of movies in the 90s had trading cards.
Yeah, that's and something I'm going to have to look up. I'm going to see if Buckaroo Banzai actually had any trading cards.
I can't recall off the top of my head.
I'll have to Google that one. I'm curious. It'd be fun to get that.
You know, I guess the first non-sports cards I ever had anything to do with, my brother, he's 8 years older than I am, so he grew up through the 70s and early 80s. It was his coming of age, where I was late 80s, early 90s. He had the Elvis Presley trading cards, and he had MASH, the TV show, trading cards. And those Elvis cards, he wouldn't even let me look at them. I could see where they were, but he'd never let me look at them. And for a while in the 90s, during all the craze for non-sports cards, those things carried a lot of value. Unfortunately, his didn't, because he had taken a black magic marker and wrote his name on the back of every one of them.
Oops.
And I believe he still has them. And I'm pretty sure the way our relationship has been through the years, if I ask him about them now, I probably still couldn't look at them.
Oh, that's great. And but, you know, for him, I'm sure it's the, you know, it's the collection. It's the prize of having it. I don't think, you'll worry about any resale value at that point. You're just, you know, these are my Elvis cards, and I've had them since I was a kid, you know. And,
right. And you think about the pride that would come with a set like that for the accomplishment, because to get a whole set when there was no eBay, there was no Etsy, there was no internet trading post or forums or anything, you either had to buy enough packs to get the whole set or have friends who were also buying packs to trade with.
Right.
So that was a monumental feat in the 80s to actually complete an entire set of anything like that.
Yeah, I actually, when I was grabbing a few of the folders that I have right next to me, I came across about three folders and a bunch of boxes of the Star Trek Next Generation cards. And I, you know, that was the one that I spent the majority of my time trying to complete that collection. And you could tell, because I had so many duplicate cards in those boxes. I was like, oh my God, how many of these did I buy? But yeah, that was my, trying to get all of those, you know, to fill into that collection. And they just kept churning them out.
Yeah, I never had a chance to complete a collection because the stores we would go to here, you know, I live in the Appalachian Mountains. I grew up here. There's not a lot of stores. The closest Kmart back then was 40 minutes away. So you had to depend on what the convenience store had. And a lot of times you may have one or two selections, and one or both of those selections would be baseball cards. Rarely did we see non-sports cards. When we did, and I could convince the old man to turn loose a quarter or 35 cents, whatever they were at the time, I would get one pack, and you'd go back 2 weeks later and there wouldn't be any more. So as I got older, you know, I have bits and pieces of sets, maybe one pack worth of cards from all these different sets. I shifted focus when the internet came along, buying unopened packs, just because I love the artwork on the old wax packaging and things. And I've showed you here on camera a lot of these. To me, at this point now, I have a huge collection of unopened packs of all these cards. I usually, when I find unopened packs, I certainly get more than one pack because I still love opening packs of cards. So I always make sure I buy enough packs when I find them that I can open one or two packs for myself, just to see what I was missing out on back in the day.
So of all these unopened packs that you have, I mean, there could be, you know, those bonus hologram card type things that are in there. You have no idea.
Right. But you know, that those gimmicks didn't come along until the early 90s. So the cards from the 80s, the gimmick back then was the sticker cards,
yeah,
and the poster cards, because the backs of the stickers, you put them together and you made like a 9-card puzzle, or some of them had a 15-card puzzle that you could put together and frame. So that was the gimmick then, is I need to buy enough packs. If I can't get the whole set, I at least want to complete the puzzle picture from the backs of the sticker cards. And when I open these packs of cards from the 80s now and I get those stickers, I have a cooler that I travel a lot of places with, and it's covered with all kinds of bumper stickers and other stickers. But the majority of the stickers are the sticker cards from all these old packs, like Masters of the Universe and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, A-Team sticker cards all over this thing. And people will see it and they'll be like, what in the world is that? And then I have to take a few minutes gladly and tell them just exactly what they're seeing with those stickers.
I could see that being a conversation starter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, based on the way that you were collecting or not collecting through the years, I mean, were there any, particular card or anything like that that you just felt that you needed to get? You know, that this was the your unicorn.
yes and no, because along with the non-sports cards, do you remember the Panini sticker albums?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that they had those at the local grocery store, and those were a lot easier to track because, like I said again, without being able to get a lot of packs, I may never get a checklist, so I wouldn't know exactly what cards I was looking for when I could buy cards. But the Panini sticker albums, you could see the outlines of every card in the collection. And you'd buy the pack. For those who don't remember, you'd get this sticker album, and it was filled with pages. It was like a magazine, and it would tell a story, or it would be photo galleries, and they had all these blocks blocked off to where stickers would go, and they had numbers. And you would buy packs where you would buy trading cards, but in that pack would be packs of stickers that you would peel and put in the correct location in the book. So I had, oh gosh, I had Masters of the Universe. I believe I had She-Ra Panini sticker album, WWF Wrestling, Nintendo sticker albums. So as I'd get closer to filling those up, then I was always on the hunt for specific cards at that point. But as far as collecting, not really. If when I got into Masters of the Universe cards, of course, you know, I wanted every character I could get. Like, I got to get a He-Man card. I got to get a Teela or a Skeletor card. But beyond that, there was no White Whale or Holy Grail card from anything I can remember that I was into.
Okay. Yeah, for me, it wasn't one that was like it was hard to get. It was like the first set of the Marvel cards that came out. One of them was the Stan Lee card. At the time, I was in the Navy when I just really started to get into the whole comic book scene. And believe it or not, I was a late bloomer for getting into comic books. It was like something that I didn't really appreciate, what comic books were until I was 18, 19 years old, which is really kind of a late bloomer. But, you know, that's, you know, that the heyday of 1989, you know, Batman was all over the damn place.
Yep.
And so that just sucked me in. And I got a chance to go to the San Diego Comic-Con before it was a thing. And it was just, it hooked me. It got me involved. But my first duty station, I was over at DC, and I started to, you know, because I was appreciating the culture of it, they came out with those non-sport Marvel cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started collecting those, and I got the Stan Lee card, and I had a friend that was into sports cards. So he was giving me all the pointers about, you know, when you go get, autographs or, you know, how to take care of cards and all this kind of good stuff. And Stan the Man Lee was visiting as some sort of comic book show that was in D.C., and he was going to be doing autographs. So he's like, all right, well, you got to make sure you use a Sharpie. Don't take like a regular ballpoint pen and things like that. And, make sure, you know, you've got a backup Sharpie. And, you know, he was like, he had, you know, it's a system.
And, knew his stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, he knew his stuff. Yeah. He took me under his wings and said, here's how you do this. And so he went with me to this comic book show, even though he was really only into sports cards. And so he waited with me, and he took, like, because Stan was only signing two or maybe three cards or two or three things at most. So I got him to sign my Stan Lee card and one of my holograms. And then he stood in line and got my other two holograms signed by Stan. So I don't have them with me right this minute, but that's about the pride of my collection was those signed cards by Stan.
Well, that's pretty cool. And like I said, I never had a Holy Grail that I was looking for, but I do remember that first series of the Marvel Universe cards, kids at school who had them, they were all on the lookout. And I don't believe it was rare, but I believe it was that first edition that had the famous battles cards, and everybody wanted the Wolverine versus the Incredible Hulk card. That was either that set or the second series. I do remember that causing a stir in homeroom before school, but not with me personally. It didn't.
Yeah, because that was like the first appearance of Wolverine that they were highlighting, or it was like a Marvel milestone. I forget what the card was called, but you're right. That was a fun one.
And, you know, you talked about being a late bloomer with comic books. I wasn't necessarily a late bloomer with collecting. In the early 90s, I was huge into comic books because I fell hook, line, and sinker for the speculator market. So my friends and I were trading anything with a chromium cover or hologram cover, or special card inserts. It wasn't until many, many years later that I came to appreciate comics for what they were intended to be. And now, I don't know if you've ever been to the website comicbookplus.com, but it's all public domain comic books from the Golden Age, like the anthology books where every book had three or four stories in it, and you can download those and read them free of charge all the time. And I just love the art and the old writing, and there's a ton of work on there from Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and classic creators like that that fell into the public domain that you know, I believe their number now is like over 30,000 comic books that you can read for free. Not to get off topic, but yeah, I was big into comics in the 90s, but for all the wrong reasons myself.
Yeah, for me, what got me was the realizing what Batman was supposed to be. And right. I didn't realize everything that was in pop culture was, you know, you had the Super Friend Batman, or you had the 1966 TV series Batman. And everything was kind of cheeky and, not so serious. And then when I had the opportunity, you know, before going to see the movie with Michael Keaton, I was able to read the Frank Miller, graphic novel, The Dark Knight Returns. And I was like, okay, if this was Batman was supposed to be, then I've been missing the boat. And so that's what got me.
You know, when it comes to Batman, I have enjoyed all incarnations. The 1966, you know, the Super Friends.
Super Friends.
And the dark, you know, the Batman the way he's supposed to be. I've been entertained by all of it regardless. I'm a big Batman. You can see I'm wearing a Batman shirt tonight, but big Batman fan. And I've got, since we're talking about him here, let's see. I'll show you a picture. Batman cards from the first movie.
Sure.
I have some opened. Matter of fact, when I open these packs of cards, I scan them on a flatbed scanner, and I do on my site, RetroRamblings.com. It's called Wax Pack Flashbacks. And since you're big into Batman, I put that up a couple months ago. It scans of all the cards from that pack. And here's Batman Returns cards from Top Stadium Club, the glossy cards. So, yeah, big into Batman all the way around. But let me ask you a question, though.
Okay.
Because I've got an interesting story, and I'm always curious to see what other people say. When you were buying non-sports cards back in the day, was that something you traded with friends, or how did you – was that just something that was personal for you?
It was just personal for me. I really didn't have, anyone that was geeking out about, you know, those particular subjects like I was. You know, like I mentioned, Star Trek, The Next Generation, or the Marvel cards. I didn't have anybody in my immediate circle, you know, because like I said, I was in the Navy, and, you know, you get kind of thrown into a melting pot of people, when you're in the Navy, and I didn't find a nerdy clique, if you will, yeah. You know, to do that kind of thing with. But, you know, there was, you know, so many people that had so many different other interests, you know, and, you know, everyone, you know, you could tell when you get somebody where you're like, oh, yeah, that's nice. And then they just kind of move on. But, you know, when you get somebody grabbing hold and they're like, oh shit, let me get involved in that. And, we can start, you know, sharing stuff. Yeah, that never really kind of happened with the comic book thing.
Well, you know, it was weird for me. All my friends who were into cards, we would trade baseball, football cards, but it was like, we never crossed lines, and I never figured out why. If somebody had a baseball card I want and I'm trying to make a trade, I couldn't throw in 18 cards with it. They were like, no. But we would trade sports cards for sports cards and then non-sports for non-sports. I don't know why we never mixed that, but Were the Star Trek cards the first non-sports cards you got into?
Actually, I believe it was the Marvel cards first. Yeah, that got me. But that's the funny part is when I go downstairs and I'm looking at my stuff, I don't have a huge amount of the cards that, for that particular series, for series one and series two of those Marvel cards. I don't have like a bunch of loose ones. So I'm trying to remember if there's some sort of magic box that I have somewhere that has all of those times that I was trying to fill out that collection or not. Or did I somehow get a whole set together? And I don't remember doing that. I remember buying them separately.
And I guess when you got into the Marvel cards, was it for the cards themselves or was it just a byproduct of enjoying the comic books?
I've always been one of these guys that enjoys learning about the back history of these made up characters. You're talking about, like Batman's Rogue Gallery, and it's so easy to know, Mr. Freeze, but, to know him as Victor Fries or, Victor Freeze, himself, or know, the backstory of Harvey Dent, going into, Two-Face, just knowing the rich history that they gave to all these different characters. There was the comic book series that Marvel did called Who's Who.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, the history of these characters, their first appearance, and just, what got them into whatever it is, be a hero or a villain. And I always loved reading that stuff. And the non-sports cards gave me a condensed version of the back history of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's what it was about. It was about getting, learning stuff about these characters that, because I didn't collect them all. I was probably more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy, but, I definitely appreciated both camps.
Right.
But, getting to know a little bit more about, characters I may not have known about, if I wasn't collecting X-Men at the time, I wouldn't have known anything about Havoc or, any of those other guys.
So it was for you more of an extension of what you were already enjoying. It was another way to enjoy,
right?
By picking up the cards. Yeah. I think I know. I remember seeing, I talked about the Panini sticker albums and being huge Masters of the Universe fan. I have fleeting memories of seeing the Masters of the Universe cards in the stores. And I had a couple of packs. But really, the first real conscious memory and decision of buying cards was a mix of sports cards and non-sports cards. Because Fleer in the late 80s put out some sets called Baseball's Greatest Gross Outs and Awesome All-Stars. And I'll show you a picture of those. And they are comic book drawn baseball cards with these weird sci-fi characters at all the positions. So it was a hybrid. I'd already been into baseball cards. But those were the first non-sports cards I remember picking up of a conscious decision that I want to buy non-sports cards. Nobody else had that I was around. That was just a thing for me personally, and I had several packs of them. But and it took me for years and years and years. I'd think about those cards, and I couldn't remember what the hell they were called. And I was reading on the Retroist website, and somebody on there had written a post about them. And as soon as I seen the picture, I'm like, holy crap, there they are. That's it. And I took that knowledge and went straight to eBay and bought a case.
For weird things to find out, to discover, there was a co-host of mine from our original show called 80s Reboot. There was this dude, and he was talking about these collector cards called Dino Attack or Dinosaurs Attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to go look those up, and they were so gross. They were like, people being dismembered on cards. And it was like, it was crazy that, that was something that kids could just pick up in the store.
Yeah, and somebody, I don't remember who it is, but somebody on Twitter this weekend is running a giveaway for 8 unopened packs of those right now that you just retweet to win that I've seen and entered. But now that you mention it, here's a, if you still got your screen up, here's a, one of the awesome All-Star cards showing the comic art and just the weird creations they come up with for these things.
That is really great art.
Yeah, and on the, well, that's a puzzle piece on the back, but
okay.
The rest of them, like you were talking about the comic cards, you get the little character's backstory on the back of these.
Right.
The back of the cards almost look like Sergio Argonis art from Mad Magazine. It's just a little off from his, but that's the style of the art. Nothing is credited on the cards themselves. I could probably look it up, but yeah, I fell in love with those because I was big into baseball cards at the time, and these were the first non-sports cards, and it was like a perfect transition. They're baseball, but they're not. You know, they're non-sports, but they still have a sports tie into them.
Right. So you, with your going off topic, but on the sports side of things, were there any that you know you got autographed that you're proud of?
No, because we never here where I live had any opportunity to go to any shows or meet anybody.
Okay.
So. When the early 90s come around, the mall, which was an hour away, ran a card show one time, but there were no guests there. There was never any opportunity around here to get things signed. It would have taken a monumental trip to even have a chance to get something like that autographed. You know, the closest pro team is Atlanta, and that's 6 hours from here. Well, at the time, it was the closest team. I guess the DC Nationals would... But they're still about 6 hours too. But you know, there was nowhere around here to go for anything. I grew up with reading comic books and seeing ads for comic book conventions like the Great Lakes Comic Con and things from the 80s and just drooling like, yeah, that's never going to happen around here. I'll never get anything like that.
Yeah. So they don't do anything like that now? Like there's not a market or anything like that to do something?
Well, now we actually have RobCon, which is in Bristol, Tennessee, which is 45 minutes from here. It started out in his little comic book store. Robert, who owns it, started doing a show about 15 years ago in his store, and then it got big enough to where he had it in the store and in his parking lot, and then they went to a hotel banquet room, and now it's at Viking Hall, and it fills the whole show floor and all the hallways and out in the parking lot, and it's actually a very, very nice show. You can find... Since you have a retro podcast, you can find so many old retro comic books, cards, toys, games, podcast alley, artist alley. So it's a really big deal. And matter of fact, it's coming up in 3 weeks from now. We'll be taking the kids back to it once again.
Sweet. Yeah, I there's actually two different flavors that are here in the Chicagoland area, but I know there's many other cons that you know come and go. But the one that I always go to is one called C2E2, because that one seems to have remained true to, you know, the comic book industry as being the focal point, whereas there's another one by Wizard World that has become more of a autograph session. You know, it's a way to you've got to purchase the you know the glossy photo and have them autograph, you know, or pay for, you know, $10, $15, $20 or whatever it is to get a selfie with them, you
right.
know, of you know some you know celebrity, and it's like, well, you know, I've already paid, you know, whatever it is, $20 a park and $25 just to get in the door, so I'm already out $45. Now you want an additional $20 or $30 to, you know, kind of meet somebody? Doesn't seem fair to me, so I don't really play ball.
All right. Now, you know, we travel to cons. We are 8 hours from Philadelphia, but we travel up to RetroCon in the fall. And that's where I've got a lot of these unopened packs from dealers there. But it's just a mixture of cards and comics and toys and games and 80s celebrities and pro wrestlers. And it's probably my favorite con to go to every year just because it is such a hodgepodge of everything.
Yeah.
Especially with the toys and things that I'm into. So we do travel to cons. Heroes Con is in Charlotte. It's 3 hours away. I've only been to it a couple of times, but while you're at a good break, I'm going to show you some of these other cards here. Well, you were into comic books. Were you ever into picking up Wizard magazine?
Oh yeah. I definitely had a lot of those.
You know, they would put the cards in their magazine.
Yeah.
That's something it seemed like the circles I ran in, we had no respect for the cards they produced. They were fun to look at and keep for yourself, but it's like they had no trade value whatsoever because we all had it, I guess, and you knew it was paid promotion. But that was pretty cool to buy a magazine and get free cards all the time. I'm shuffling through here, 18 cards, 19. I think these are from 84, maybe. Dick Tracy cards, Alf cards. Alf, excuse me. The Alf cards, every pack of them came with a Booyah baseball card as well, which he always talked about being the biggest sport on Melmac. Booyah baseball, and they kind of remind me of the Awesome All-Stars I was showing you there, but
yeah,
those are pretty cool. Black Hole movie cards, Dune movie cards. Some of the cooler ones, I don't have a pack of them over here with me that are open, but this one's pretty cool too. In the early 90s, you remember the television show The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles?
Yeah.
Well, they came out with some trading cards from Pro Set, and it features, I mean, they're really nice, slick cards featuring steals from the episodes, and on the backs you get a little bit of the story, but every pack also came with 3D cards and came with an individual 3D viewer in every pack, which were pretty nice. And they came with they had multiple game cards that came. There were several. This was a Hidden Treasure game card that came in the pack, and on the back it tells you what you're looking for, and it's a gatefold. And you put your 3D glasses on, and it's like a hidden image concept. So those are pretty cool packs for the early 90s. You got not just cards, but games mixed in. It was, you know, you open a pack and thumb through it, and you're done in 30 seconds. At least this pack gave you something to do for 5 minutes. the cards from Jaws 3D, the movie, I'm going to hold those up. All the cards in the packs of these are in 3D because the movie was in 3D. And every pack comes with a small set of 3D glasses, too. But the backs of the cards didn't really tell the story. You had the 3D image on one side and the non-3D image of the same card on the other side. So, and people listening, July 22nd starts Shark Week on Discovery Channel. It also starts Shark Week on RetroRamblings.com, where you will be able to snag a big handful of these unopened packs of Jaws 3D cards for yourself. So, anybody listening, write that on your calendar if you don't want to miss out on that.
Do you watch the Discovery Channel? You just kind of jumping on the Shark Week thing?
Yeah, just going to piggyback off of it. Yeah, sure. We're not a...
That's fun, though.
We're cord cutters. We don't do cable. I haven't done cable in years. So it's a... I'm a lover of old TV shows, so Netflix and Amazon Prime is where it's at for us.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'll watch these new shows when they're 20 years old.
speaking of unopened, actually, I got three packs of the 95 Fleer Ultra X-Men cards. I got three packs of those unopened right here in my hands.
The 95. Was that the set drawn by the Hildebrand brothers? Or Nelson, maybe?
Anything here? What do we got? There's a special offer again, an X-Men stopwatch. Send $5.99 plus three wrappers from the 95 Fleer Ultra X-Men cards. Your name, address, blah, blah, blah.
Those were gorgeous cards. That's why I was asking, because I remember actively seeking those out back in the day. The artwork on those are fantastic, and the glossy coat on them is really, really nice too. But I'm looking, I'm not seeing any. It may have been a variety of artists participating. I know one of the Marvel Universe years around then, 94 maybe, they had that artist Nelson who done the whole set, and the Hildebrand brothers done a whole set of Marvel Universe Fleer Ultra. I don't know. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. I know the Hildebrand brother. It looks like a lot of their art.
Yeah, I've got
those are gorgeous.
Yeah, just based on the packs themselves, I got Wolverine and Cable and Jean Grey on the three different packs I have.
Yeah. Okay. I found it here now. Luis Royo, Mark Sasso, Julie Bell, and Boris Vallejo done the art on those. So I was thinking of another set, but the art on those is just fantastic.
And I have unopened. Wow, how about that?
Hey, that's one I do not have anything unopened of.
All right. Yeah, I'm kind of... I've got a folder here that just has a hodgepodge of, like, one card for, like, a whole bunch of different random stuff. Like, it's not a collection of stuff. So, just flipping through it, you know, and it... I've got a weird story to tell about how I've, like, accumulated a big collection of comic book stuff. My mom, when she gets to collecting something, she goes all in. And I had expressed the interest of comic books, and so she started to express an interest and started to build a collection. But what you don't know about my mom is that, you know, she'll go and just buy anything, you know, that's related, you know, at the time, you know, to fill this collection. But then sometimes down the road, she will turn off that button and it'll be, I'm not interested in having that anymore. Now it's just in the way, you know, fill in the blank of what that might have been. Beanie Babies, you know, she went the gambit with Beanie Babies. and so she went through her period in the 90s of getting into comic book collectible stuff. And so my collection had amassed to about, I would say, 5 to 6 white long boxes full of comics. Her collection amassed to about 20. Because she would go into the store, you know, the local store that she would go to, and she had, you know, one of the boxes set up, as you do. And she's like, well, anything that's brand new that comes out that's like number one issue, put it in my box. And then I want these titles, whatever, you know, her favorite was at the time. And, you know, if there was anything that was collectible with any of those, you know, put that in the box. And then when she went to go check the box, she would just go, you know, screw it, I'm just going to buy it all. And it was great that she had so much discretionary money to just, you know, blow on all this stuff. But then, you know, down the road, you know, that button turned off for her where she was like, oh, this stuff's just in the way. If you want it, come get it.
Wow.
So I have a, I crap you not, down in my basement, there is a, I have a closet that has about 25 long boxes, and they're all full of comic books. And they were all predominantly in the 90s era. You know, where you had all those multiple covers and all that stuff.
And probably got one, probably have one full box of nothing but X-Men number one with all the various covers it had.
Yeah, there was tons of that stuff. But, you know, the same thing is, you know, because she was, you know, one of those type of collectors that would just take whatever it is that, you know, was getting promoted. So she ended up with a lot of extra stuff, you know, and these are the cards that when I flip through, sometimes I'm surprised by what I see because I didn't necessarily collect them. My mom did, and I inherited the collection. So sometimes I'll be going through stuff and going, crap, I didn't know I had that, or she had it.
Was your mom a big watcher of QVC back then?
No, not really.
Because they, QVC, they would run those shows in the early 90s on comic books and cards when the speculator markets were hot. They'd run an hour in the afternoon, and they convinced so many people to join the speculator market. My mom used to watch QVC religiously 24/7, and she knew every host backstory and everything. Well, she would show up one day and say, hey, I got you something from QVC, and it would be like, here is a Wolverine trading card. But it wasn't from Fleer Ultra or Marvel Universe. It was some company that produced a Wolverine card and limited the 50,000 copies, and you got a certificate of authenticity, and she'd pay $20 for it. She'd give it to me, and I was like, yeah, this ain't worth anything.
But yeah, I mean, this is kind of how random this is. I go from one page that has a Vampirella gallery card. You know, it looks like somebody is cosplaying her. Return of the Jedi card, Empire Strikes Back card, and then I got a Monkees TV show card.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's going through just so much randomness. Batman Master Series cards. Purgatory Chaos card from Wizard. It is just, it's Fairchild from what was the series? Gen 13.
Gen 13, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, and none of these are like full at all, but yeah, Wizard cards like you mentioned before. So there's Lady Death, Witchblade, yep. Youngblood.
Had that.
X-Files.
Yep.
All good stuff.
I'm going to hold up a picture here for you from the dregs of my collection. These are Saved by the Bell, the college years edition non-sports trading cards.
We need to get Screech in there.
Yeah, but, you know, that there again, I don't know that that series needed trading cards.
No, it did not.
There they are. There's so much stuff. I got a couple of packs. What year is this from? I want to say 81. Let me check that out. 1982. I'm going to hold it up for you to see. Smurfs Super Cards. These are really long cards, yeah. Much longer, and they only have 7 cards in them. And when I open my first pack, I hope this is the pack here. Let me see if it's got the card in it. I'm wondering if they were aiming for an adult market with this, because this would have been before the Smurfs really took off as far as kids go. Do you know they substitute the word Smurf for everything? So I'm opening this pack of cards, and I come across this Smurfette card where she's trying to look all sexy and sultry, and the card says, "Want a Smurf around?" And I'm just thinking, I'm sure kids didn't get it at the time. But I look at that now, and it's quite amusing to see cards like that. There was something else in there too. No, okay, that must have been another set.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think as we've gotten older, we have a different perspective as fathers now. When we see stuff, and we're like, how in the world did this become a thing? You know, and you know, I go back and I'd watch a movie like Little Darlings with Christy McNichol and Tatum O'Neill. And the whole premise of the movie is who can get, you know, lose their virginity first.
Never seen it.
Yeah, and, you know, back in the day, it was like, I didn't realize it was, you know, that was, you know, I guess, you know, as a kid, I just kind of accepted the premise of it, and I didn't really check it at the door. But now as an adult, I'm like, that's really not an appropriate movie. No. And you know, fill in the blank, you know, you had RoboCop, and, you know, that was definitely not a kid-appropriate movie, but what kid didn't see it?
Right. My mom, who was a straight-laced and as strict as anything, took me to the theater to watch it. That and Darkman. It really weird. And she's the woman who refused to take me to watch Richard Pryor in The Toy because it was questionable, but yet I got to go watch
RoboCop. Yeah.
See, I've been anal too through the years when buying these old packs of cards. If they had more than one piece of art on the wax pack, I got to have both. These Batman cards from 89, in the boxes, they had 2 different pack designs. I can't just have one. I've got to have both. And I've got multiple packs of so many cards because of that. The Masters of the Universe cards from 83 or 84 had 4 different packs in the box. Well, I've got to have all 4 in the collection. I can't just be happy getting a pack that's got He-Man on it. I've got to have He-Man, Skeletor, Teela, and Orko. It's just not complete without all 4 of those. Even though there's no significance to it, it's just the wrapper. I guess the OCD in me that says, well, you got to have them all.
Those same cards that you just held up, though, those 1989 Batman trading cards, I have a case of those, and I've got about, I'd probably say it's about half full of unopened packs. And what I had done with those was, a little while ago, I was doing this thing where we would do a live podcast, and I would do, like 80s trivia, and I would give that as, you know, for the right answers for the people in the audience that would get the trivia question.
Huh.
So they'd get one of the packs. And I always thought that was just a fun little giveaway, you know, to, you know, those that appreciated, you know, Batman back then.
Something others may appreciate too is I have a YouTube channel that you can get to through tinyurl.com/retrorambler. I position the camera, and a lot of the videos I have on there, I open old packs of these cards and thumb through them and do a little commentary on them. They're about 5-7 minute videos, so anybody who's looking to relive vicariously opening these packs of cards, go check that out. And speaking of watching Rocky this past weekend, here's some cards from Rocky 2.
Nice.
Yeah. Adrian!
Yeah. I love the way the cards back then, especially the cartoon cards, they would take one episode and they would take the animation cells and they would pick 65 animation cells and make that the card art and just fill in the story on the back. So it couldn't have taken much to produce. They would just send the storyboard art to Topps or whoever and say, here, make us a set of cards of these, create a wax pack, produce a million packs of them, and let's all get rich. And then today, people like me are still buying them because, you know, that's just what we do.
That's what we do. That's our thing.
Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 3 trading cards.
All right.
Those are pretty cool.
Were you big into wrestling?
Wrestling consumed my life from 1986 up until the day Ric Flair retired.
Okay.
American Gladiator cards. That was close to wrestling back in the day.
That was a fun show.
Yeah, I love that. Back to the Future 2.
All right.
I don't know. They did. I don't believe they made Back to the Future 3 cards. I don't know if it's because they didn't expect the movie to do well or just maybe the Back to the Future 2 cards didn't do well. Indiana Jones cards.
Nice.
These things are pretty cool. That's just scenes from the movie. And you being into the DC comics, I'm sure you were, the time frame, you were probably all in on the death of Superman.
Yeah.
Storyline.
Yep.
Doomsday, Death of Superman cards are some of my favorite non-sports cards ever, really.
Oh my God. That was so interesting when Superman 75 came out about the death of Superman, and they advertised it in USA Today, and everybody that was like a non-collector went out to go buy this issue, and then like it created such a demand because they didn't have enough to go around. Right. And I remember back in the day that thing, you know, you would find, you know, people selling it for $75-$80.
Yeah, side story, just exactly what you were saying. My brother, who was not into comic books, and his best friend at the time, we had a local card shop 30 miles away. It was called Buck Fever for some reason. But they went and they got in line for Superman 75. They both got a copy. I did not. So I settled for a copy of Wizard Magazine number 17, and that was the first Wizard Magazine I ever bought. That was a sucky consolation prize to not getting Superman. But here's one, if you've never seen them, here's one of the cards from the Doomsday set.
Yeah.
It's the comic images from the death storyline and the funeral for a friend. They went all in with the marketing on that. Besides the articles in the newspapers, you know, there were cards. They put out their own version of Time Magazine. I think it was called, News Time Magazine, focusing on the death of Superman, like Kennedy had been shot. You know, it was a whole issue dedicated to that, and yeah, all the tie-ins, the pogs that come along with it.
Well, I remember the actual issue itself was back. It was black bagged, and you got an armband. You got it was a news article from the Daily Bugle, you know, about the death of Superman, and then obviously the issue itself, you know, showing, you know, how it happened.
Yeah.
That was definitely a great marketing machine.
Oh man, they made so many, I ain't gonna say comic book fans, but they made so many comic book buyers with that storyline. That's really that, along with X-Force number one and X-Men number one, and the fact that Wizard incessantly plugged Image and Valiant Comics, all that combined to create the speculator market of the 90s. And unfortunately, that led to the decline of comics in the 90s when everybody got out of it. But
right.
Yeah, that was a huge, and you know, it changed their whole comic book universe with Superman, not to get on a side tangent, but they seen how much business they done with the death of Superman. So then we get Batman Nightfall, and then we get the Green Lantern goes through the treatment where Hal Jordan loses his mind and goes bad. So they really altered their their writing universe for the next 20 years because of that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They decided to make an event of somebody's misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Marvel and everybody else jumped on board, too. I mean, they weren't right. The only ones, but what else have I got laying around here? Little Shop of Horrors cards. I don't know why that needs a card set. Not so much because the movie wasn't good, but these cards are typically marketed towards kids.
That was a fun movie.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Alf trading cards. Speaking of movies that didn't need cards, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves cards.
I had those. I actually did have those.
I picked a case up on eBay, I don't know, about a year ago, unopened, $3.
Here's a good one. The last time I went to C2E2, I was with my daughter, and there was this one vendor that had this, you give them a buck, and then you could spin a wheel to win stuff. And I won, it was two non-sport trading card packs that were unopened. And Adam's Family Values was one of them. And that still remains unopened. I don't have it with me right here, but yeah, that's still somewhere in my archives.
Oh, lovely. This right here was a marketing machine too. New Kids on the Block trading cards.
Oh, NKOTB. Nice.
I guess that's probably just cheesy, you know, cheesecake, beefcake photos of the guys in the band, be my guess. I've never opened the pack of them. Superman 3, the movie trading cards. That's pretty cool. I need to open a pack of those one day. I've never opened a pack of those either.
Two is better than three.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, two was probably the best one.
Yeah.
Except for the director's cut of the first movie. It completely changed the movie. That's really good when you watch the director's cut.
Now, do you, in your collection, do you have any of these, like, one-page sheet things that are, like, 8.5 by 11 that show, like, a promo for the cards?
I used to have a ton of those, but I got rid of them all 12, 13 years ago. I probably had 100 different things for, and most of that was for non-sports cards, like, it would be a four-card uncut sheet for Skeleton Warriors cards with the ad on the back, or Marvel Universe cards. Just you name it. If it was out, I had it at that time.
Yeah, I was. The reason why I'm asking is because I'm sitting here looking at one that's like a Beavis and Butthead thing that obviously was in something my mom would have picked up. And then I've got another one that's like Amazing Spider-Man. Looks like 94 first edition. It was like different villains of his surrounded by him. It's really kind of cool.
Here's something that I don't really know how to talk about this other than I guess Topps was and Pacific were trying to make their own profit off of the war. Operation Desert Shield trading cards.
Oh, I remember those.
There's also Desert Storm cards, three series of Desert Storm cards came after these Desert Shield cards. I remember those being on every counter of every grocery store we went to back then. So they had to be mass produced. And it's, I guess I'd say sad to look back on it now and say, who was profiting off of this?
All right. I just found something that is just super cool that I didn't realize I had. This is Wolverine Temporary Tattoos.
Hmm.
And it looks like it was made in, where was it, 94? 93. Tattoos shown actual size. Completely unopened. Only $2.49.
I don't have them within reach, but I guess these days in my unopened pack, I guess this would be one of the crown jewels. I have some unopened packs of tattoos from the 60s for the Flintstones and the Jetsons that are unopened.
Oh, that's cool.
I wonder if they would still stick.
Yeah, so many just random stuff in here. It's kind of really cool to, like, poke around.
Yeah, I just grabbed a couple of handfuls. I didn't dig deep into anything. The nice. A-Team trading cards, Mr. T.
Oh man, I used to love watching that. Like every the reruns is when I got hooked onto them. So, Mr.
I
T,
have,
I pity the fool.
I have memories. Well, you know, let me sidetrack. I pity the fool did not come from the A-Team. That come from his appearance in Rocky III, but it become his catchphrase because the announcer asked him, what was he asking? Do you hate Rocky Balboa? He goes, I don't hate Balboa. I pity the fool. But it stuck with him from that point on, and it always gets credit to the A-Team, but I don't believe he ever uttered that phrase on the A-Team show.
Yeah, it just became a Mr. T thing.
So. But who don't like Mr. T, though? He can do no wrong.
This is true. This is true. And, you know, a lot of our heroes from back in the day are, you know, unfortunately, they're fallible. They're real people. But unfortunately, there's those that ruin the ride for me. They ruin the memory. You know, and I could think of, you know, names like Bill Cosby or, you know, Hulk Hogan or, you know, Michael Jackson when he got really weird. You know, they kind of tainted the, you know, what it was, the buildup of those guys. And I'm so glad nothing like that has been happening with Mr. T.
Actually, and just the opposite. You know, he was famous for all of our lives, for all the gold chains. But he stopped wearing them. I listened to him talk that he went down to visit the victims of Hurricane Katrina. And he's walking around wearing all this gold around his neck and all his rings. And he said, I'm looking at all these people who have nothing, who've lost everything. And he said, I felt horrible. And I felt like it was so disrespectful for me to be flaunting what he had when they had lost everything. He said he went back to his hotel and took it off. And as far as I know to this day, he's not worn it again because he don't, you know, too many people in the world suffer too much for him to flaunt his good fortune in front of them like that. So that, you know, that's a pretty cool gesture.
That mad respect for him even more now. You know, I had no idea of, you know, that being, you know, something that he went through, and to hear that was his response. You know, he acknowledged, you know, is acknowledging those that are having difficulty. And I love it. I appreciate him now even more. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, he was always, Alex, I hate to get off on side topics, but, you know, Mr. T is one of the celebrities. I really enjoy his work. You know, I love his movies and the A-Team and the cartoon, and they even eat a few bowls of his cereal back in the day. But he's also a celebrity that I kind of hold up for other celebrities because he's done so much like that. You know, everybody talks about his hairstyle, Mohawk hairstyle. It was not a mohawk. I don't remember what the name of it was, but when he traced his lineage, he traced his genealogy back to tribes in Africa, and that was their traditional hairstyle of their warriors. And to honor his heritage, he started cutting his hair like that. That's when he started his mohawk, quote unquote, you know.
All right.
And he just never gave it up to honor his heritage. So he always seemed to have a reason for everything he'd done. It wasn't just, hey, look at me type stuff. It was, you can look at me if you want to, but I ain't doing it for you. You know, this is for me.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that kind of mentality. And it doesn't sound like he gets a, you know, too big on himself. You know, he associates and appreciates those that are around him and kind of what they're going through. You know, yeah. It's not, and he's approachable, it sounds like.
When he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame a few years ago, they had to cut off his acceptance speech after 45 minutes because he had written an essay about how much his mother meant to him and how much he loved her. And that was what his whole speech was about. It was not about anything he had done. It was all the things his mama had done for him. And they had to cut him off, unfortunately, but you know, he tries to just make things about everybody else and not about himself. But I guess Mr. T's a subject for another time. But
yeah, it sounds like it. But yeah, so back on sports cards or non-sports cards, are you still going to be collecting? Is this something that's ever going to, do you think, foreseeable future? Like,
I will keep going back and buying old cards. I've not bought a pack of new cards when they were new in 20 years. So everything I buy is things I didn't have when I was young that I wanted. Things that I did have and got rid of for some reason through the years, I'm going back. And then things I just never knew existed from way back when. What do you still collect non-sports cards, or do you just hold on to what you had from back in the day?
Just hold on. I haven't really purchased anything new in a long time.
So what got you out of it? Do you remember, you know, when you stopped or why, or did it just happen?
I think it became one of those, I've got better things to do with my money. Yeah, so because I started to become a bit more practical with expenditures. And I think that's kind of what got in the way of that. Even though I think they're cool as hell and I appreciate the art and everything that goes into making them. Because, I mean, I appreciate the talent that's involved in, you know, the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd gotten to the point where it's like, well, you know, I mean, my son needs hockey gear. So that's more important than, you know, dad going out and buying, you know, a bunch of, you know, cases of, you know, some old movie, you know, collection. So,
you know, I want to say frugal because I don't like calling myself cheap, but I'm very frugal. I surf eBay, you know, once or twice a week looking for good deals on these things. Like I said, that box of Robin Hood cards, I paid $3 for the cards and $3 shipping. So I got 36 packs for $6. And I turn around and sell these in my retro store on Etsy, so I actually get the money back. But for me, back when I first started or stopped with non-sports cards, it wasn't a cold turkey stop. I evolved. Pogs come along. And here were the discs that featured all the same artwork, and they were out forever property just like cards were, but they were also a game you could play with friends. And right after Pogs, then along came Girls. And that's really when it stopped.
That would do it.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't think they would see the cool factor in it. And two, like you said, the money was better spent on them and trying to take them out on a date at Taco Bell than it was buying a pack of Batman cards.
Yep, definitely. And another, you know, part of it now for me is the, you know, like I said, I have the whole closet full downstairs, and I have overflow of stuff that I've accumulated, and I realize that I really don't have a spot in my house where I can, you know, put all that shrine of geekiness out. So all it does is it accumulates in the basement. And I'm like, well, that's no fun. I'm not, you know, sharing it. So that's another reason why I have stopped adding to the insane madness of that collection.
Well, like I said, when Girls come along, I never got rid of what I had. I just quit adding to it back then.
Right.
And I would pull it out from time to time as the years went by and got married. But then along came my first daughter. And not only did I need the room that was taken up, I needed the money that would come from getting rid of it. So I wiped out everything. I had a large action figure collection unopened, comic book collection, sports cards, non-sports cards. In the span of 30 days, it all went away. And didn't come back again, any of it, until just in the last few years. You know, as the daughters have grown up and there's more discernible income there, you know, I'll drop $6 every now and then on a case of cards and things, but it's more, you know, when I buy them now, I want a pack or two to put up to collect for 20 years from now, 30 years from now, to look back and thumb through them again. But I also like to open a pack, and, you know, there's still something that gets me when I break the seal on a pack of cards and you're flipping through them to see what you got and getting excited. You know, if you're going through a pack of cards from the 90s, did I get a hologram? Did I get this or that or an insert or an acetate card? But I also like to share that experience with everybody else. So when I buy the cards, I open it usually on camera so other people can watch it. I then scan the cards and put them up for readers of Retro Ramblings so they can enjoy it and live vicariously. And then the packs that I get in those transactions that I don't open, I turn around and share at a very cheap price with people through my retro store so they can pick them up. So they get a lot of use for the little bit of money that I put into them.
It sounds like you're definitely showing the love. You'd mentioned is it just one daughter or do you have others?
I have two. My oldest one, she really likes a lot of the old retro stuff. My youngest one, you know, we have our food review YouTube channel. That's what her and I share in common. We like to eat good food and talk about it with people. And my oldest and I, I have a little retro museum in the house. She'll come and look at things at it every now and then, and she'll ask stories. You know, what is that? Where did that come from? And I'm all the time more than willing to say, pull up a chair, kid. Let me tell you where this come from and how I came upon this piece of collectability here. Matter of fact,
you get to touch this stuff.
Oh yeah, it's no fun. It's not just to look at. You can't relive the excitement and the fun if you can't. You know, I mentioned earlier I had a full collection of unopened action figures. I'll find something on eBay now, an old Masters of the Universe figure going cheap. I buy them, and you can believe her and I are playing with them. I still have all my old Legos my mother kept for me. We're in the floor playing with them all the time. And on my retro YouTube channel, I think the last video we put up, I had bought some Pogs off of eBay. I've not owned Pogs in 20 years. And somebody had some going pretty cheap with the game mat and everything. And I bought a box. And our last video is me teaching her how to play Pogs. And the whole rest of the video is, if any people probably turn it off, but it's just her and I sitting at the kitchen table playing Pogs for an hour. So, you know, but yeah, we play with this stuff. It's not hands off. You can't enjoy it, fully enjoy it, if you don't use it and experience it.
I didn't know if it was like the Elvis cards, you know?
No. You know, even when I was a hardcore collector, you know, actually for collectible purposes, even speculator comic books, hell, I would open and read them, you know, once a month. I would go back and reread some comic, like The Death of Superman when I finally got a copy of it. It didn't stay in the black bag. It wasn't put up for collectible purposes. I bought it because it was supposed to be collectible, but I couldn't ever resist the urge to enjoy it for what it was supposed to be either.
All right. Yeah, actually, I do have a copy of the black bag unopened, but I have read the actual comic, you know, as a reprint, you know, for Superman 75, which we talked about. But I don't know why I haven't, you know, opened it up and looked at the armband and all that other stuff to enjoy that stuff. Because I'm obviously not selling my collection. So I don't know, you know, if it's going to just sit in the corner of the basement, then why am I not enjoying it, right?
Well, you know, some of that stuff, and I have a curio cabinet in the living room, and I rotate out retro items because they're great conversation pieces. And like the Superman 75, if it was left in the bag, you know, it serves a purpose as a conversation piece. Maybe somebody would come over and see it and say, oh man, I had that. I remember that. And, you know, or what is that? And so I rotate things out. So even if you don't open things up like that to read, they do serve a purpose. You can always start conversations with them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so is there anything else on this topic that you wanted to kind of throw out there before we wrap things up?
No, I just wish I had room where I'm at right now to pull my whole collection over, because we could sit here all night long. I could show you unopened packs and various cards.
I don't know how well that does for our listeners, though.
No.
It's doing great for me, though.
Well, I may have to hook you up on Google Hangouts sometime, and we do a video for Retro Ramblings, and we can both show off cards so everybody can see them.
Oh, that'll work.
Yeah. But no, you posted that on there about who wanted to get together and talk about old non-sports trading cards. I have loved these things since... So I remember having Masters of the Universe in 83, so at least since I was 5 years old, I've had my hands on non-sports trading cards. There's just something about them. I said the thrill of the hunt, of finding the cards in the first place, open them up, seeing what you get, what you don't get, trading them with friends back in the day, and even now going back and reliving all that by opening them up. It's I could see, as long as finances allow, that I would continue buying old packs of cards from now until who knows when and talking about them just as a little side hobby. So, I mean, it's a great topic. I wish kids today, they don't have anything like it today. Now everything, they have mobile apps where they try to win or capture some elusive creature on their game or something. I guess that's probably the closest comparison that they have now, that thrill of the hunt, never know what they're going to get. Because I know some of the mobile games my oldest daughter plays, you can buy, they call them packs of cards. It's all virtual, but, you know, it's for new abilities. I don't even know what she's playing. So I guess they have that thrill of the hunt, but the old analog technology of physically having to go to the store and buy a pack of physical cards and open them yourself is a thing of the past these days. You still see cards, especially baseball cards. I don't think baseball cards will ever die. There's too many old school baseball fans to let that happen, but the non-sports cards market is certainly not what it used to be.
Yeah, I to express kind of what you were saying there, I mean, with my son, I know that he's always playing Xbox, and, you know, a lot of things that you're talking about, you know, is the thrill of the hunt to get a, you know, a virtual skin. Like, his favorite character can now dress up as, you know, with specialized armor or something like that, and that's his thrill of the hunt now. It's not a physical thing. You know, or he's got to play a game and do some sort of task to unlock, you know, this ability or something like that. So, I mean, that's what the kids, you know, that's the kids now. That's the kids' version of, you know, the thrill of the hunt. You know, that, you know, what we got through this, you know, that's how they get their, you know, their connection to that. And it's different. It is so different. It's not the, you know, where you go into a store and you buy this thing and you don't know what you have until you go home and open it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's definitely a different world. So we're definitely becoming old school, if you will.
Well, you know, the thrill of the hunt has always been, and it always will be. It's just what form it takes. You know, cavemen right. were looking for dinner. We were looking for Stan Lee cards. They're looking for skins. I mean,
yeah.
There's always a business model to satisfy that basic desire there. So whether it's cards or apps or who knows what in the future, it's always going to be there.
Yeah, it will. And yeah, as long as there's those people that specialize in marketing, they will they'll figure out how to sell it to us.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so for our listeners, why don't you give us the web address for your website again, and any other activities that you want to plug about that?
Oh Lord, you want the whole list or just the top 10?
whatever's your biggest on your fancy right now.
I guess the biggest and best place to catch me is always at my website, retroramblings.com. You can follow me on Twitter at yesterdayville. Check out the Retro Rambler on YouTube at tinyurl.com/retrorambler. Got a Facebook page, facebook.com/retroramblings. If you are in the market to buy some of these unopened packs of cards, tinyurl.com/retrostore. That's where I sell the surplus of what I buy. Cheap price is usually $1 a pack. So anything somebody's looking for, and a lot of times I'll run specials, 4 packs for $2 or something. And coming soon, Dave and others like him have inspired us. We are going to start, a couple friends of mine, our own podcast coming up next month on the retro topic.
Nice.
So look for that in all your feeds coming soon. It's going to be called the Retro Revival, where I'll be preaching the past each and every week, hopefully. So, yeah, that's what we got going on right now.
Retro Revival with Reverend Mickey.
That's right.
I love it.
Preaching the past.
Sweet. That is awesome. I love the theme. That's great. I can't wait to hear that.
Well, hopefully you will agree to come on and be a guest from time to time, most certainly.
Well, I would be honored.
And I'm glad you had me on this. This has been a lot of fun tonight. A lot of these cards that I've pulled out here to show you, like I said, I just grabbed a random handful. Some of these I've not looked at myself in a year or more. Some of them I forgot I even had, like the Saved by the Bell cards, college years.
The college years.
And I tell you what, for your listeners, when this goes live, when you listen to this, come on over to RetroRamblings.com. Or no, scratch that. We'll do this on Twitter. Follow me at YesterdayVille on Twitter. I will just take a blind grab, 5 or 10 packs of these in celebration of this podcast, and we'll just give them away. How's that sound?
Awesome.
We'll do a contest for everybody who listens.
Nice. That's sweet. I feel like I should have something to, you know, like I should give up some of my stuff.
Well, that's up to you. I'll have some for you, though.
Yeah. Well, we'll figure something out here. I'm sure there's plenty of me, plenty that I can, you know, part with that, you know, is just collecting dust. But to, yeah, just remind the listener, we do have our website out there, which is BonsaiRetroClub.com. Just remember that's ZAI. And that's where we have all our links to our social media endeavors, be it Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, all that kind of good jazz. So please go check that out and follow us there. You know, if you're so inclined and you're in the tweeting Twitter world, then please do follow us at Bonsai Retro Club, on Twitter. And then, you know, normally I'll ask for people to give us reviews and all that stuff, but, I don't want to take time with that right now. So, just be excellent to each other and have a great whatever, because we have no idea when you're going to listen to this. Bye.
Bye. Right, thanks.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
Banzai!
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 You know, what I love so much about the conversations like this is the randomness.
Oh yeah, that thing went all over the place.
that's the joys that I get of this, because it's like those wax packs cards. You don't know what you're going to get when you start a conversation like this.
Right. Yeah. When something hits my brain, I just can't let it go. Most of the time, I have to run off on that tangent.
Yeah. Who knew that we were going to have a love fest for Mr. T when we agreed to talk about this?
Well, I may have could have predicted it, because I have a love fest for Mr. T just about once a week for somebody somewhere.
But yeah, it was a blast having you on, man. I definitely, you know, if there's anything, any other topics or, you know, things that you want to chat about, we can definitely do it, man.
Well, anytime you just need somebody, holler. Cause like I said in the beginning of the show, I know a little bit about everything. I can talk my way through a whole lot of stuff, because God, ever since I was a kid, even then I didn't want to leave the era I was growing up in. And ever since I was about 12 years old, I was starting to look back on what I'd already experienced, and it's been that way ever since. So,
why do you think we're like that? I'm saying we, because, you know, I'm going through the same thing where, you know, for me, I think it's a personal journey of remembering the simpler times, you know, before having to pay a mortgage and the stresses of work and all that stuff. You had, you know, these, you know, turning point in your life of, you know, kind of figuring out who you were, or even before you figured out who you were. And hell, you know, I would probably say I still struggle with figuring out who the hell I am right now. But, you know, back then it was just enjoying life.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever watch the show Mad Men?
No.
There is... It's one of the later episodes of the first season. It's the title of the episode's called The Carousel. If you have Netflix or anything, Mad Men's on there, I suggest you go watch it. Don Draper, the main character, he's given a pitch for Kodak's Carousel slideshow projector. And they wanted to call it The Wheel. And he goes into his pitch as the advertising man, and he starts it out and he's talking about how nostalgia is a powerful, powerful thing. And the literal translation of the word nostalgia is the pain of an old wound. And he goes into the details that, you know, like their slideshow projector, it's like a carousel. It takes you up and down and around to your past and back again to your present. And I tell my kids all the time, you can't tell where you're going in life unless you know where you've been. You know, it's like if you don't heed history, you're doomed to repeat it. And that's, for me, that's a part of it, is how did we get to where we are? Because, Dave, I am somebody who looks at the world we live in now and shake my head, and I am literally afraid of what my daughters will go through as adults in this world that we live in today. And I don't know if a lot of it is escapism, trying to go back in time. I don't know. Of course, just straight up, I think so many things from the past are just so much better than their contemporary counterparts. I would much rather sit and watch an old sitcom like Newhart than watch any of the new trash that's on TV today. And I say trash because the regulations of what's on television has become so lax that I'm ashamed to let my daughters watch a lot of it. You know, yeah. They learn things before they need to learn them. And, that, you know, I talked about in the episode where I've been a cord cutter for years for that very fact that I don't need them to learn the birds and the bees from That 70s Show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons, but of course, I guess we could about all say it. Well, not everybody, but childhood was one of the best times of my life, and I'm always trying to go back and relive those times. And I can get a lot of that feeling just from getting on eBay and just searching something random, 80s toys, 80s action figures, and I will come across something almost every single time that I had totally forgotten about. And when you scroll over something like that and you're like, holy crap, I had that. It's like you get the chill bumps, you know, it just takes you. It's almost like I imagine it's what a drug user, the high they feel when they take a hit of something. It's when I see something from the past, I'm like, holy shit, I remember that.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
You're probably right. You probably nailed that. And So many ways that you just articulated about how, you know, the way things were back then, you know, as far as like the TV shows, the series, the cartoons, they were, let's say, innocent, you know, and they don't have that anymore. You know, shows have got it. Shows aren't successful unless they have an edge to them. Right. And they've got, and they push the limits each and every time, you know, for, you know, what that, you know, whatever that is going to be, you know, the flavor of the week. And, you know, there's, you know, topics that are just way more advanced than our kids should be watching. And if the parents aren't aware or aren't keeping that in check, you know, then you find out, you know, you're teenagers watching some series that, you know, has got a mature rating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really didn't happen back in our day.
No, and I think a lot of it is the indulgence we have today. You will know this. Saturday mornings as a kid was the only time you got cartoons. Right. That was appointment viewing as a kid. Now there's such a glut of it, and with, you know, Netflix and YouTube and the internet, everything is at your beck and call, so nothing means anything anymore. You know? Well, of course, now I do enjoy that myself now, to be able to get on Netflix and pull up and watch an old episode of He-Man. Don't get me wrong. But it's, I think the kids today are not going to have the emotional attachment to things from their childhood like we do to ours, because of the abundance of everything they have. Not that we were not spoiled, you know, for our time, but just like with the cartoons example, you got that once a week. And if you missed it, you missed it. Nowadays, there's no emotional attachment because, I'll watch it if I want to. I'll watch this when it's on. I'll stream it. I'll do whatever. So, and I think we, because they were such big deals to us back then, that's why we look back so fondly on it now. Where my kids, it's hard to tell how they'll feel about things when they get older. Because everything has always been, at my kids' age, they're 11 and 13, with the internet generation, everything has always been available to them.
Right.
Anytime. So it's hard to miss something when it never goes away.
Yeah, that's a great point. Everything is on demand for them and readily available. And where, you know, for us, it was setting that time across, and, you know, and there was a commitment. Yeah, you had to make that commitment to Saturday mornings, or, you know, trying to make that mixtape and record a song off the radio. There was a commitment there.
Mm-hmm.
Versus now we're on Spotify. I can just pull up any old song I want.
Right, and the magic is gone.
Yeah.
You know, like, you were big into comic books. In the day, you'd go to a comic book store if you had one close to you, which we never did. We had the grocery store, and you were at the mercy of what they brought in to go find a comic book. Now, you know, comixology.com, you can just get on and read whatever you want whenever you want to read it. There's no... It's... The less you have to work for something, the less you appreciate it. So...
Yeah, and that goes back to that thrill of the hunt discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I think I shall let you go, brother.
Man, it's been a blast. I hope we can do it again soon. I tell you what, next time you do Retro Jeopardy, I want in on that. I was so mad at you guys.
I'm sure you were.
And you all were missing some easy questions. I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm driving, I'm like, how did nobody know that?
Yeah, it was actually kind of funny. It was fun to do that. And Jason was, oh my God, he's amazing. So, that was a blast. I'm looking forward to, you know, round two of that. And you're definitely going to be involved.
I think I'm going to be recording with Jason next Sunday. I think we're going to be doing a Rank'em episode for his podcast on our favorite television shows of 1988.
Nice.
So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, very good.
Well, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a blast to actually get to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. I get to talk to Rose Marie. She, on our YouTube channel with my youngest daughter on our food review channel, we do a live stream about every other Saturday night, and Rose Marie is the first one there and the last one to leave usually. So get to holler at her. She's very sweet.
She's great people.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Have a good night.